This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome into the NBA Morning Deuce for Friday, April 2nd. We got a big episode today, and that is because I'm joined by Laz Jackson, host of Pistons vs. Everybody podcast. He writes for DetroitBadBoys.com. He is your guy for everything Detroit Pistons. We're not just going to talk Pistons today, but it is a perfect time to bring on a Pistons expert because it seems like the fingerprint of formerly overpaid Pistons are all over the NBA right now. So we could talk about that a little bit. We'll go through some of these games and we're going to dive into the Detroit Pistons because I'm interested in this team. I think I mentioned last week how I've done sort of a 180 on the way this team was rebuilt after watching them more and more this year. So I'm interested to hear from a Pistons expert what the fan base and what they are feeling right now. But Laz, appreciate you jumping on with me, dude.
No, thanks for having me, Joey. Even if the first thing is just like bringing up terrible memories of how all these former Pistons, I could have had this championship team if we just had like Kevin Durant or LeBron James in Detroit, apparently.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of how it goes. And you're not the only one. So at least you get to commiserate with what 25, 26 other fan bases in the NBA. So, but since we have a 7-game slate tonight and I brought up former Pistons now on potentially championship teams, we'll talk. Let's start with the Nets. Nets beat the Hornets 111-89. Blake Griffin's obviously there, didn't play tonight, but who did play tonight was LaMarcus Aldridge, debuts for the Nets. And I got to say, I'm pretty surprised. I'm not surprised that he played well, I guess, because he's LaMarcus Aldridge. He's a pretty good player. I'm surprised that he played 30 minutes, that he started, and he was on triple-double watch at halftime. Like, I think the reports of his demise were greatly exaggerated at this point. And he steps into the starting lineup. DeAndre Jordan, healthy scratch. I didn't think they'd go away from DeAndre Jordan that quickly, but they looked incredible. No James Harden either.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm not going to lie. I did not watch this game at all. I did watch multiple games. I did watch more than the Pistons in preparation for tonight's podcast. But, like, yeah, I'm just staring at the box score. First thing I notice is, you know, LaMarcus starts and plays 30 minutes. And that means DeAndre Jordan is a DNP CD. And also, like, Nick Claxton played the other, you know, available big man minutes, basically, in if there had been a competitive game, it would have been more minutes for Claxton. And I know that's going to ruffle some feathers around the league just because, like, Claxton is on the come up as this really switchable defender who perfectly complements what the Nets are trying to do offensively because he doesn't need the ball in his hands. But it seems like tonight, you know, like without Harden, without Blake, the Nets kind of needed, and, you know, obviously with no Durant, the Nets kind of needed another guy to absorb some of that offensive load. And it looks like, actually Jeff Green did that tonight for them. But you can see why LaMarcus Aldridge was the choice to kind of like play that role for Brooklyn.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you. I think like my biggest thing when this signing happened, and the Blake signing for that matter, was just that I think I'm with all the people around the league that are on the Nick Claxton train saying, like, it's nice to get all these buyout guys in there and they can all play, but if it's at the cost of their best big man, which is Nick Claxton, best center, at least, it just doesn't make sense. But I agree in what you're saying that
it'll be a matchup situation for Aldridge, and at least just to get them through the regular season, having that other offensive option, because they're just like half the teams in the league. They're a mess injury wise, but he looked good and he looked happy. Like, you know, it's crazy with these buyout guys.
Everyone looks happy in Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And he just was like, they were feeding him the ball in the post. He was just doing, I mean, he looked like, I don't want to say vintage because he is still 35 and he's a little bit slow and whatever, but he had some vintage moments with the turnaround jumpers and his passing out of the post out of doubles. He looks pretty good for them. I just can't, it's surprising. I'll be interested to see if DJ is consistently now just out of the rotation, how that works.
I think big man roulette thing that Brooklyn has going on is like actually in a weird way, like it's ideal for them from a roster construction perspective, because like they're not going to need DeAndre Jordan in every single playoff matchup, right? They, you know, you and I both like Nick Claxton, but like, do I want to play him like 30 minutes in game six? Like not particularly right now. And so like just having multiple options, each of which do different things, but who are all like still kind of good, I think just like adds to the power and versatility of this Brooklyn team. It's like, that's not an accident, right? Like they don't have dudes who do the same thing. And I don't think that's an accident.
Right. And obviously on that note, you know, they bring in former Piston Blake Griffin, doesn't play tonight, but it's another guy who everyone was like, oh, he can't play anymore. I personally thought that got way overblown, but you watched him closer than I did, at least for the time he did play this year and the last couple of years. What was your impression of Blake towards the end of his run in Detroit? And do you think that he can consistently contribute for this team?
So the thing with Blake is that he was pretty fairly washed in Detroit, or at least he looked pretty fairly washed in Detroit. But what I think Brooklyn has shown, and I think should be a lesson for like handling big men in general in the future, is that Blake could still be a very effective player if his minutes were managed more carefully. They are definitely managed more carefully in Brooklyn than they are in New York. He was playing, you know, I think he was averaging like 34, 35 minutes a night in Detroit. And, you know, obviously that wear and tear probably had an impact on, you know, his level of play. And then, he looks much different, you know, 20 minutes a night every other night than, you know, 35 minutes a night every night. And then, you know, in Detroit, obviously Jeremy Grant's come a long way in a very short time, but he was still asked to do a lot of stuff like for the Pistons with the ball in his hands. And clearly he's not amazing at that stuff, right? Brooklyn doesn't ask him to do that all the time. But like I joked about at the top though, like if you're playing next to James Harden and Kyrie Irving, you know, like Blake Griffin's going to look better. And so like, yeah, Blake would have looked less washed if the Pistons had James Harden and Kyrie Irving, right? Like
that's fair.
That's my take.
I'd probably look less washed, I guess, with those guys. I will say, like, here's the thing. This game in particular is scary to me for this team. It's just that, just in the sense that like, you expect Brooklyn, you probably expect them to win, but at the same time, Charlotte's good. Like, and I understand LaMelo's out, but Charlotte is a good team. I mean, they've been playing well this year. They're a good defensive team. They play tough. They're clutch. And I mean, Brooklyn just put it on them. I mean, it was balanced. I mean, Landry Shamet and Tyler Johnson both hit five threes. Like you said, Jeff Green went on. It was just a balanced, just ass whooping pretty much. And
yeah.
And that's a scary thing when, you know, three of your, two, obviously your two best players, and then Blake doesn't play. And now DeAndre Jordan's out of the road. Like it's an embarrassment of riches. It at this point, it just kind of doesn't, it seems like they are the prohibitive favorite. Not that they're a lock, because I do think there could be potentially the longer these guys don't play, you know, like chemistry things, we've seen that with teams before that went in their first year together, but I don't know. This team might be just too powerful for that.
Yeah, I definitely see some of that. I'm also just struck by, you know, Charlotte scored 89 points tonight. Charlotte's not a bad offensive team. And classically, Brooklyn is not like a great defensive team. But we see, like, you know, without some of their worst defenders in James Harden and Blake Griffin and one of their more limited, I guess, defenders in DeAndre Jordan, they only let Charlotte score 11 points in the first quarter and 17 points in the third quarter. It's like, so it's like Brooklyn can create problems for you defensively, like with the right mix of guys. And like, and that's a pretty scary thought because they don't need to, you don't need to hold you to like 90 points in order for Brooklyn to win a game. Right. Like,
That's wild. Yeah. It is crazy. And worth noting that Steve Nash and KD both spoke today and said that KD's pretty close to returning, which, I mean, obviously is huge for them in some, for so many reasons, but guy's got to play eventually. I mean, I get the more he sits, the more concerned I get that he's going to re-injure himself just trying to play his way back into shape. And also interestingly enough was that Steve Nash, I guess, said that the organization had like internal conversations about the KD Rappaport situation. I don't know what that means. He didn't really expound upon it. And I don't know if they can really do anything or would do anything, but it is interesting that it's gotten to the point that they're discussing it within the organization. Cause it was pretty nuts, that whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You informed me of the Rappaport situation, like in depth, like what actually happened before we got started. And so I won't really speak to it, only to say that I totally understand why Steve Nash and the Nets organization would at least offer that they are like having internal discussions about it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it would be, yeah. I mean, I guess you play it safe. Cause if they ask and you're like, oh, well,
it's KD, like, no, it's totally fine. Like, yeah, you can't get away
KD,
with that.
It's just KD being Twitter KD, you know? It's like, oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one team, I think not that, again, there's not a team I see right now that is beating these guys in seven games, but a team that at least has a chance to slow them down potentially and hang with them defensively looks like Miami. Once everything starts clicking, Victor Oladipo, the other guy who debuted tonight, they beat Golden State 116-109. And actually these days, 109 points against Miami is a lot, the way they've been defending. But that starting lineup, at least in the very beginning, with Oladipo, Bam, Jimmy Butler, and Trevor Ariza, looked like they came out with a defensive intensity that was just insane. And that's a scary defensive team. The offense for this team is still, they scored 116 tonight, so it's better. Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero have been better since the trade deadline. But man, this defensively, and they have the 29th pace in the league. So they play slow and they defend like crazy. That might be the only recipe to have a chance against a team like Brooklyn.
No, yeah. And you look at that lineup, and the versatility is the thing that stands out, right? Like you can drop with that lineup. You can switch with that lineup. Robinson is really the only like quote unquote like average weak-ish defender in that lineup. And he's helped out by the fact that he's 6'7" and like in good shape. So Miami like is not afraid necessarily of that guy getting picked on in a playoff situation. And so like, yeah, that's a very like good thing to see out of Miami. I am surprised that like Trevor Ariza has been good for them. Not necessarily that like he's not good, but we hadn't really seen a lot of him this year. And I wondered kind of how much he had left in the tank. And that's another like buyout situation. You get on a team, a good team. Well, Miami's, you know, 25-24, not a great team, but a team that went to the finals last year has had a lot of issues this year, but a team with the potential to be great. And you see guys, you know, kick it up a level and play kind of inside themselves. And it has a profound effect on their game.
Yeah. Miami's just a weird team this year because last year they were just an okay defensive team. They're always a good defensive team. That's just kind of how Miami is, but they're okay defensively, but they made that run because of their shoot. They were second or third in the league in shooting, just great offense. And it's totally flipped on its head this year. They've been somewhat, at least since their early issues, since Jimmy Butler came back from COVID, a relatively dominant defensive team, but offensively they just cannot get it going. So it's weird. It's a weird situation. I do think Vic looked a little, I mean, he looked like he's, you know, trying to figure things out. He's struggling passing the ball a little bit tonight, you know, 0-4 from three. Not that he's a great 3-point shooter, but that will help them because they shoot so many threes and Jimmy has this tendency to be so passive that it just having another guy who's going to go downhill and score at the rim for them is, I think, going to end up being huge once Vic is sort of, you know,
if Vic is still that guy.
That's true. But even I will say this, even if he's like 75% of that guy, it's just an option because watching the Heat, no one does it. They're like unselfish to a fault and they haven't been shooting the ball that well this year. So there's times in the games with Miami where somebody just has to take over offensively and they still refuse to. Jimmy will do it, but then he'll have games like tonight. He had 22, but he only took 13 shots. Like they spread it around. Sometimes you just need a guy to just go get it. Yeah. And there hasn't been that guy for Miami consistently this year.
Well, that guy for them is Goran, right? And he's been kind of in and out of the lineup.
Yeah, he was out again tonight.
Yeah. And like he's what, 33, 34? So it's hard to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's hard to ask him to do that every single night. But, you know, and like, you know, when it counts in the playoff setting, et cetera, you know, that they'll have that element.
Yeah, well, that'll be interesting to see how Spo handles that now with Oladipo. And I think they said on the broadcast tonight, Tyler Hero has played 12 minutes in the fourth quarter in like the last 15 games. So they obviously have been going to him as a closer and he's averaging like 19 or 20 since the deadline. So,
Yeah, you talked about this with Robinson too, but those look like two guys who are just like happy to not be in trade rumors anymore.
Oh yeah, especially Tyler too, but Duncan. I mean, the shooting, and it's funny that like Heat fans and just people in general were down on Duncan shooting this year, and before the trade deadline, he was shooting like 38%, which obviously for an elite shooter is not. For what he did last year is not great, but he was still shooting 38%. But since on
high volume, yeah.
Right. But since the deadline, he's shooting 50. I mean, he was 4 of 11 tonight, but before tonight he was shooting like 58%. So he's probably down probably like near 50 now since the deadline. I mean, which is just absurd. And like, yeah, Tyler just another 20 tonight. This team, yeah, the rotations as they get close to the playoffs will be interesting because they are deep now. And also, you know, like a game like tonight, they got away with Bielitsa being their backup five, but I'm not sure that you could get away with that long term. So that'll be an interesting thing too, because they obviously had to move on from Myers Leonard, and then they traded Kelly O in the Victor Oladipo trade. So seeing what they do if they're able to go get someone, I don't know if there's anyone out there for them.
Yeah, and then so, you know, for Golden State, Steph scores what, 36 points on 19 shots. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And nobody else on their bench does anything of note. And they tried everything, apparently.
Yeah, this team, I know they have some guys on their bench who have played well this year, but that bench is, it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch. It's just not good.
How is Nico Mannion minus 8 in 1 minute? How is that possible?
Yeah, I didn't even realize. I honestly watched most of that game and I barely even remember him being in the game.
Well, he was only in for 1 minute.
Yeah, I know.
Somehow they were outscored by 8 while he was on the floor. That's ridiculous. Okay.
Yeah.
Not going to pick on Nico Mannion.
But yeah, I like Nico. He's in a tough spot.
Yeah.
He's in a tough spot on that team.
Yeah.
But that bench, it's rough. And, you know, it's like if Steph in these type of games, these are the games that like as a franchise player that just you bang your head against the wall. You're like, what can I do?
Yeah. What more can you reasonably ask of Steph in order to win this game?
And he's hurt he's still hurt. And if you watch it, if you watch the Warriors, the last couple games since he had that tailbone injury, he's playing well. but he looks banged up, which is crazy. Like every time he took a charge, it didn't end up being a charge in this game, but he, you know, he was guarding Oladipo. Oladipo drove baseline and turned it over. It could have been a charge. And Steph, you could tell when he got up, he was like getting up a little gingerly because he's still not 100% on that tailbone, but he's still playing great. I said we did like second half bold predictions, I guess, after the All-Star. And I said these guys wouldn't make the playoffs. And it's obviously not a Steph thing. It's just they just don't have this roster is just rough, man.
Yeah. Are they okay? So they're what, 10 right now?
They're nine. They're nine, half a
no,
game.
With the loss tonight, they're 10 behind Memphis.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, and a game up on Sacramento. But yeah, and the playoffs being, you know, the top 10 instead of the top 8 now, it kind of throws everything off.
Right.
But yeah, that is, you know, if you tell me Steph Curry plays, you know, most of the year and the Warriors are below 500 this late in the season, I'm a little surprised, honestly.
Yeah, it's a tough situation for them. I wonder at what point, if you're the Warriors, do you just, you know, do you say, like, are we really playing our asses off to get into the play-in tournament and risk something happening to Steph and compromising potentially having a run again next year when Klay comes back? Or do we just, you know, do we call it at some point?
On the other hand, they have that Minnesota pick, right? So they don't necessarily like need to call it to have a high draft pick this year.
Yeah, I'm not even worried about it. The pick is less of a concern than if Steph continues to just look banged up. Like at some point, we've seen what happens when players play with injuries. And at this point, what are they? They're not playing for anything right now. They're playing to continue to be in the playoffs. Like best case scenario for them right now is seven or eight seed, I think, and getting beat in the first round. It's for this organization with Steph Curry. There's no win there.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're them, right, you're telling yourself like, do we feel afraid of a first round matchup with Utah or Phoenix? And the answer is no, not particularly because we still have Steph Curry. But if he's worn to the bone by the time you get there, because you had to, you know, it took everything you got to get you into the playoffs. Like, yeah, that's not an enviable situation, obviously.
Right. Yeah, for sure. The other team, I guess, that people think could give the Nets a run, the Sixers. We'll see. We obviously, Joel Embiid comes back on Saturday. They've been the best up until now. Actually, Brooklyn's the best team in the East now, record wise. But up until a couple days ago, the Sixers have been the best team in the East all season. They blow out the Cavs. And actually, the only notable thing from this game for me was Kevin Love played basketball tonight, which is just, I didn't even think about it. Like, it just hasn't really crossed my mind that he's just sitting there on their bench, making a whole lot of money, not playing any basketball. He just came in. I think he had like 9 in the first quarter, ended up just playing 20 minutes and they still lost by 20.
It's weird because normally a guy in that situation, right, we're hearing the whispers that he's trying to get out, right? Where it's the Blake Griffin situation where he's, you know, given interviews in the New York Times saying he'd love to play for a winner. And the team's like, you know, you get the Stein report or whatever, that the team's working towards a buyout. But Kevin Love's just been hurt and doesn't seem to mind things in Cleveland too bad. And so we're just like left with, you know, how he's going to, it seems like he's going to play out the rest of that deal.
And he must have known. I mean, I guess he must have known when he signed the deal that this could be coming. I would think Kevin's not like a, you know, he's a pretty bright guy by all accounts. Like he must have seen the writing on the wall when everyone left and then he signed that deal. Like it was going to be a rough few years.
Yeah, but he had, you know, $120 million or 120 million reasons to sign that deal.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
And you know how it is. The thought process is always like, I can get traded on this deal later. And we're finding out, that's not always the case.
Yeah, and that's, and you know, I would love to see him play a little bit more at 32. I feel like he could still be a good player for some team. I know he still has 2 years left after this year for a lot of money, but like there's a lot of teams that won't probably be able to get better than Kevin Love at this point. Like I feel like he could be a good player for a lot of teams, but he's never on the court. So no one, it was weird how much we haven't heard about. That's what was surprising to me. I was like, we just passed the trade deadline and the buyout market, and Kevin Love's name has not come up even a little bit, which it almost always does.
Imagine like Kevin Love playing those like 18 of Bielitsa minutes we talked about for Miami, right? Like how much better would they be?
I mean, and it's exactly what, yeah, actually Bielitsa made a couple, he shot the ball decent tonight, but yeah, like that's exactly what, it's been a struggle with Kelly Olynyk for them this year at that spot. Now Ariza is not shooting the ball well. He's playing well. He's not shooting the ball great yet. And then Bielitsa, same thing. It's like a team that shoots the ball that much, he would be great for them. But a guy with his skill set, when you already have your team built, like to bring him in and put him in that spot, he'd be so good for so many teams.
Yeah.
Still 32 is still, it's not young, but it's not bad. I'm sure he could still play.
Yeah. His game was always conducive to aging gracefully offensively.
Right. Yeah. All right. I know you said you watched a little bit of the Pelicans Magic game. It's so funny to me with the Magic. They blow up their organization and then they win two in a row.
They're 2-1 after they blow up everything. As a Pistons fan, I'm paying close attention to what the Magic are doing, because after they blew up their organization, the assumption in my mind is like, oh, they're going to win like 3 more games the entirety of the year and like be among the Pistons in the race for like the lottery odds. But if they continue playing as hard as they play every night, like maybe that won't be the case.
Yeah, it's weird. So they're obviously, the roster's just totally depleted right now, and I expect them to be bad. But I will say, like, I worked for Steve Clifford for my last 2 years when I worked in the NBA, and there's just something about his coaching style that like these guys that can't play in a lot of places, they play hard and he puts them in the right position to succeed. Like he has a way of maximizing even like the random G League guys to play good enough to compete, you know? So that's where you see like the Chason Randles playing well. And like, I actually really like Chuma Okeke, but now he's looking pretty good for this team. Like that's just sort of his thing. They're always going to be competitive, but they can't keep winning games. If that was when you blow up the team, like, I'm not a big tanking guy. I'm not big on tanking, but like, if you're going to tank, you got to tank.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Wendell Carter Jr., whom I love and whom I think was like a sneaky good pickup for them, and had a good game tonight, right? Like scored 21, had 12 rebounds. It's like the coaching staff can definitely do a great job of maximizing him and what he's got to offer. But if he's your second best player, you're not going to win that many games in the NBA. You're just going to get out talented most nights, I'm happy the Magic are pulling this off. I'm rooting for Wendell Carter Jr. to make as much money as he can this offseason when I believe he's extension eligible. But yeah, like this Magic team is just you know, keep winning and stay out of the lottery where my Pistons are going to need as much luck as humanly possible.
Yeah. Well, and then especially in a night where you guys get a win, it's always nice for them to get a win on the same night. It is worth noting two things. One, it's weird. Like Kem Birch started for the Magic tonight, which is strange because then Mo Bamba and Wendell Carter come off the bench, which I don't totally understand rotation wise, but Kem Birch played 5 minutes. So I guess it doesn't really matter. And for the Pelicans, no Zion, no Brandon Ingram, no Lonzo. So this is not necessarily a sign of like, oh, the Magic are still playing, but they played against a depleted team.
So now these are wins with, you know, no Zion and no BI. and over a Clippers team on the second night of a back-to-back after playing a national game, right?
Yeah.
There are going to be more nights like this for the Magic in the future, but this is definitely not going to be the case for them every night.
Yeah, and a Clippers team that just has it, they have a penchant for just blowing games. Either blowing games or just coming out and looking like they absolutely, like tonight, although they're playing a very good Denver team right now. They're in the fourth quarter. The third quarter just ended. Denver's up 81-70, but they just, they have those nights where they just don't look like they want to play basketball.
Denver looks like an absolute buzzsaw, by the way.
Yeah, we could talk about them. So they're up 81-70. And I've said this now every time we've recapped a Denver game since they traded for Aaron Gordon, I talk about the opening tip and I'm like, I look at this lineup with Aaron Gordon and I'm like, holy shit, man, this team is the upside now for this team. And it's like, obviously Aaron Gordon's not, he's not an all-star, but he just the upside, the athleticism, the talent, what he brings to them that they lost when they lost Jeremy Grant. God, they look tough, man. They look really, really good right now.
I thought it was possible for them to look like this. I did not think it would be this seamless a fit immediately between these guys, right? Like, I thought there was a chance Aaron Gordon might come in and be like, you know, hey, I want to do some Aaron Gordon stuff. And they, you know, accommodate him a little bit. And then when he got to, you know, crunch time or the playoffs, you know, we eliminate a lot of that fat out of his game. And it's like, no, every time I watch Aaron Gordon, he's cutting to the basket for a layup. And that's all he's doing on offense. And he's not, you know, he's not locking down Kawhi, but he's guarding Kawhi adequately in a way that they didn't have anybody else on the roster who could accomplish that.
Yep.
And so he's just fitting in seamlessly to what they needed. Just the buy-in from him about his role for this team has been amazing to me.
Yeah. Like, I watch these teams and you know, obviously they beat the Clippers last year. They came back from 3-1. But I think last year going into that series, your assumption was this team is going to lose to the Clippers. The Clippers are built to be a conference championship type team, final team. I watch these two teams, like I'm watching them tonight and I'm like, Clippers can't beat these guys. Clippers can't beat these guys in a seven. They're just a better team, like all around. Which is why, I mean, it is crazy how, which is sort of a testament to the fall from grace that the Clippers seem to be continuing to have right now. But it is also just the Nuggets, like outside of a healthy LA, and I still really like Phoenix. That's probably it. I mean, I would go Denver in the West right now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it helps when you have the league MVP on your team. The way that they've built the team around him to accentuate his strengths and like shore up his weaknesses, like that's a big part of what Gordon brings for them, especially on the defensive end. It's just like, we're looking at like a team of destiny style thing here in Denver.
Yeah. And Michael Porter Jr. too, like, taking some of the pressure off of Jamal Murray to have to go out and get 30, 35 every night, because we know Jamal Murray's an up and down. Like, we know he can go get you 50, but then we also know he can come back and get you 12 the next night. But Michael Porter Jr., especially since All-Star break, he's been averaging close to 20 and he's top 10 in the league in 3-point shooting right now, which I don't think a lot of people realize that their 6'10 small forward is, I want to say, like eighth or ninth right now in the league in 3-point shooting. He's played great, and bringing Aaron Gordon in takes pressure off Michael Porter Jr. to not have to guard the guard wing players that we know he can't guard. So it's just like, yeah, the way Tim Connelly has sort of built this roster around Jokic, like you said, is just crazy. And then they have I can tell you this, like, this is a broken record for people who listen to the show, but Denver also has two of my favorite players. They don't play them, but they do have two of my favorite players in Bol Bol and JaVale McGee. So I'm high on the Nuggets.
You like tall guys, Joey? Is that it?
Yeah, they are. They do happen to be tall, and most of these guys are. I don't know. I love Bol Bol. I just think he's so damn fun, and they never give him a chance to play. And then actually the thing with McGee is a this year thing. I turned on a Cavs game like early in the year, and the first possession I watched, JaVale McGee hit a corner three. And then the next possession, he hit a step back jumper at the elbow. And I'm like, all right, I'm all in on JaVale McGee this year. I'm just, I'm all in. It was just, I'm like, this guy's fun. I mean, obviously we know what he is. And then he's also a three-time NBA champion. And I was just watching him like, man, he could help a team. And then Denver trades for him and they haven't played him yet.
Yeah, they've gone with the Millsap Green back bench front court, which that's gonna work against some teams, it's not gonna work against others. Especially against like the Clippers, who don't have Ibaka right now and are starting Zubac, and like that's basically the only guy you have to worry about from the center position out of them. I was watching, the second half or late in the first half, they have like Marcus Morris guarding Jokic because they're not playing a traditional center because that's how they like to play. It's like, yeah, that's just not going to work for you guys. And so I think we will get the playoff JaVale McGee moments, I'm sure. But it's also like, again, like, talking about how having a lot of different types of bigs offers, positional scheme versatility. Like, you're not going to need JaVale every night either. And tonight's not apparently a JaVale night.
Yeah, it does also feel like you're saying, like the playoff thing, it does feel like a move geared towards matching up with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Because obviously they struggled with the Lakers size last year in the playoffs, and they're just going to need bodies to throw at AD. I mean, they need bodies to throw at LeBron too, but they're going to need bodies to throw at both of these guys. So that's six more fouls and a guy who played on the Lakers last year that they can throw in there. But the Bol Bol, I was hoping so badly that Bol Bol was in the Aaron Gordon trade.
See Bol Bol freed in Orlando? Mo Bamba backcourt? Yeah. Or frontcourt?
I was like, hashtag Bol Bamba. Let's go. Like, this, that was all, I was waiting for it. Wouldn't you want to see that? I think that would be very fun to watch. If you're going to be a bad team, let's have Bol Bamba lead the way. It doesn't get much more fun than that.
That's definitely funky. I don't know if it's fun. It's definitely different.
I mean, I'm also waiting for like a Denver to be playing. I don't know.
That lineup they used in the bubble, right?
I want it to, instead of it being five bigs, like five big guys, I want JaVale McGee at the five, Jokic at the four, Bol Bol at the three, Michael Porter Jr. at the two, and Facundo Campazzo at the one.
Oh, just like the one tiny guy.
Yeah. Let's go all 7-footers and the shortest guy in the NBA.
Yeah, that's one way to cover for him on defense. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we saw him basically truck Ben Simmons last night. So we know he's tough. Like, we know he can hang.
That was hilarious. As someone who is not necessarily a big fan of the way Ben Simmons plays the game of basketball for the most part, That was a very enjoyable moment.
It was. And Alex, my co-host, he lives in Philly, and I think he's turned the corner a little bit on Ben Simmons this year, but he's always never been a huge Ben Simmons guy. He was just like, yeah, he made Ben Simmons look like a bitch. Like, yeah, yeah, he did.
He kind of did.
Campazzo is so small. He's on the court right now. Like, there's no way he's 5'10". There's no way. I'm 5'9". It's TV. But I've been around. I mean, I worked in the NBA for 6 years. I've been around a lot of NBA players. There's no way Facundo Campazzo is taller than me. It just can't be. He's fun to watch, though.
He's definitely fun. He's a wizard with the ball.
Oh, some of those passes. It's like once every few weeks he has a viral pass. It's awesome. And he's tough, man. He's tough. No, they look. Team of Destiny is a good way to put it. I like that, because they look like they could go on a really, especially because we have no idea what's going to happen with the Lakers. Just no idea. Yeah.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything, which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, the last game before we get to your Pistons, was actually probably the craziest game of the night. Hawks Spurs ends up double overtime. Hawks win 134-129. And this is a huge, great win for the Hawks because this was the seventh game that they, so they went on that run, obviously, when Nate took over. Mm-hmm. But the schedule was kind of easy. So not that, you know, you got to win the games. So, and I love Nate. I think he's a great coach. I think he got a raw deal in Indy. But this road trip, they're on an 8-game West Coast road trip that I thought was like, we're going to learn a lot about this team. They could have, if they would have lost this game, they'd be 2-5. Now they're 3-4. They have a chance, if they win their next game, to come off of an 8-game road trip, totally injury riddled, 4-4. So it, I think it does show a sign that this is, it wasn't just like a honeymoon thing. These guys are starting to play some legit basketball, which is what I think people expected before the season. But now we're getting obviously a little bit more of that. No John Collins, got hurt last game. DeAndre Hunter came back. Now he's out again. So they can't, they haven't been able to get right all year. Still playing pretty good basketball though.
Yeah. I didn't know. I hadn't seen that John Collins got hurt. And so I'm, you know, I'm looking at the box score now and not seeing him.
Yeah. He got hurt in the first half of their last game, ankle injury.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Like you get contributions from a lot of different dudes, right? Like Gallo has 16 points and apparently made like a huge shot in overtime. You know, Lou Williams plays 22 minutes for them, does his Lou Williams thing.
I think this was, this might've been his first
game. I think so too.
I think this was his first game. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Bogdanović scoring 28 points is huge for them. Like that is the type of production they hoped they would get out of him when they made that move this offseason. Right. And that hasn't been the case every night, but it, getting that type of production definitely shows you what they were imagining they were getting when they made that move.
Yeah. I wonder how many times in NBA history, three guys have scored 28 points in the same game on the same team.
On the same team. Yeah.
It's probably, rare.
Capella made 10 free throws, 10 of 10 from the line. How often does that happen in his career?
Probably the first time. Trae Young has played so much better since Nate McMillan got there. I'm just not a huge Trae Young guy. I see the talent. I know he's talented. I don't think you can build a championship team with him as your best player, but he has started to play. So it must have been something with, and I thought Lloyd was one of the guys who got a little bit of a raw deal. It was going to happen eventually. Just, I thought the timing was weird, but Trae has been a lot better and he was clutch in the overtimes in this game, like hitting big shots. He didn't make his first three until the first overtime. And I think he had his second three in the second overtime. He was 2-for-2. Which is very rare for Trae Young.
Yeah. 23 shots and only 2 threes taken is an amazing stat line for Trae Young. You imagine, you know, the reason Nate was unceremoniously removed in Indy was because like he had started to find himself more disconnected from a lot of the guys in that locker room. Right. Mm-hmm. And the reason reason Lloyd Pierce got fired because he was finding himself disconnected from a lot of the guys in that locker room. And so it's interesting to me that, you know, Nate McMillan has Trae Young playing better despite like that being a, you know, alleged weakness of his, like in Indianapolis. Like, is this maybe like a honeymoon thing? Like, it's entirely possible. We'll see like, you know, what happens in the playoff setting or whatever. But, yeah, like, you know, maybe that's something that Nate, you know, has worked on. Maybe that's something that like Trae Young has seen, like, okay, now I have to like put up or shut up because I can't like get two coaches in a row fired, right? Like,
yeah, that's so fair.
That's an interesting thing. I'll be keeping an eye on for Trae.
Yeah, they're 7 right now, so they would be in the play-in. It's also huge for them to get this type of play out of Bogdanović. Now seemingly healthy for the first time basically all year. Good win for them. Who's their, let me see. I had their schedule pulled up. I'm trying to see who the last game of this West Coast trip is for them. It looks like Pelicans at the Pelicans tomorrow night. That's a win. I think it should be a win if it's the same
If it's the same Pelicans lineup we saw tonight, yeah.
I don't know what, I don't know how long Zion's out. I think it's like a wrist injury or something, but we'll see. All right, let's talk some Pistons. I was actually, you know, I was thinking
let's
about
do it. I can actually do this with some enthusiasm tonight because the Pistons played well tonight.
Well, that's where I wanted to start because, you know, we talked about the Magic and you keeping an eye on the Magic, trying to, you know, keep them out of the, you know, that bottom tier or the, I guess, top tier of draft picks. So when you see, like, as a Pistons fan, when the intent is to get a top or to get the first pick or the second top three pick to lock yourself in there. And then you come out and just blow the doors off of a team. Like, what's your reaction?
It's definitely like a mixed reaction, but I think the thing that helps is that this is kind of what the Pistons have done all year, right? Like nights like this have happened to the Pistons before. And so it's not entirely unexpected. It's just very, very rare. This team has, despite tanking, despite, you know, not being a good team on purpose, this team has played hard and with purpose every single night. And on some nights, that's enough to win. And on some nights, most nights, it's not. But like when Josh Jackson scores 31 points, you can't really be mad, right? Like it's just your night. They had a win against the Raptors where Sadiq Bey had 28 points. And it's like that's good, right? You want your rookies, you want your young guys to play well, because that shows obviously like progression in their games and performances are what they want. You're trying to build something, and so you want to have something to build on. So it's like, yeah, but you have to win sometimes. This team was constructed to avoid the locker room dampening 8-game losing streaks that really hamper a lot of other rebuilding situations in the NBA.
Yeah. So what you just said is so right, because I harp on this all the time when I'm talking with Alex or anybody really, when we talk about teams tanking and doing like the long-term tank, I've been part of that. Like I was in the video room for the Hornets that won, or the Bobcats that won 7 games and then won 20 games the next year. Like, you're right. You have to win and compete. There's no like going out there and getting beat down every single night doesn't benefit your organization. You have to learn how to do things the right way. And I was listening to your last episode with Mark Schindler. And I think he kind of said it. One of you guys mentioned like Detroit, like doing the perfect tank job of tanking right now. So like, sort of like still going to be a top three pick, like right now, third worst record in the league. But every night, like you just said, going out and competing and having like surprisingly good performances from a number of guys that look like they could be part of your core for a while. I mean, like I admittedly coming into the season was like, what the fuck is Troy Weaver doing? It's like, what is happening right now? And some of the signings, I was just like, what are we like, what's happening?
On day one of free agency, I assure you, you were not the only one.
Yeah, it was just like signing like all these forwards and giving the Jeremy Grant thing. I guess Denver supposedly was going to give him the same money, but I saw that contract. I was like, he can't live up to that. And he has obviously so far. And then just watching this team, I've done a complete 180 just in the sense that like, I didn't understand what this roster was before the season. And now there's still a long way to go. But like Jeremy Grant looks good. I like Sadiq Bey. You get Killian Hayes back soon. Isaiah Stewart looks like a huge steal for you guys. And even the kid Saben Lee is pretty good. Like there's things to be excited. I will say 30 games, like 31 points from Josh Jackson make me nervous for you guys, because I would hate for you guys to like pay him a lot of money.
fall into the Josh Jackson trap. Yeah. Funny. Last night, you know, this is the second game of back to back. Last night they played Portland. Josh and Sadiq both had terrible games. And the exciting thing that happened that night was Hamadou Diallo, right? Who they traded for prior to the trade deadline. He came off the bench and scored 19 points and looked amazing doing it. And so that's the thing with this team, right? Like any night, it could be like any one of these young guys popping and playing well. And all of these dudes, well, maybe not Josh. I mean, like I like Josh a lot. He's a native Detroiter, right? He addressed the fans when they were allowed to like first have fans back in the building, which I thought was like an interesting nod, like giving that to a guy who, you know, you signed in the offseason for the room exception, basically. But you know, having that you know, hometown connection, I think was really big for him and what he wants to do with the rest of his career. And so like I hope Josh is here for a while, but I don't think he's part of like the quote unquote like core of the team. Right.
Yeah.
But if he scores 31 points, I'm happy with it. If Sadiq Bey scores 25, Hamadou Diallo scores 19, right? Like Saben Lee scores 20 points in a win over the Magic randomly in the middle of like February. Like those are all good things. But as you can tell, they're isolated incidents. Because like I can't tell you the number of nights where Saben Lee scored like 5 points and it just hasn't mattered because they've lost, right?
Yeah.
But that's part of the perfect tank. You know, you remember the good things, and they happen, and oftentimes they're still not enough to win actual games of basketball in the NBA.
Why didn't Hami play tonight?
They're still managing him after the groin thing.
Got it. I actually watched I switched the game in the fourth quarter, but I totally forgot about him. I love him. Like Svi's a good player, but I was just so like, I was like, you're Troy Weaver just killing it, man. Like I just thought it was like for a team that's rebuilt, he has so much upside. I just love that deal for you guys.
Yeah. I hadn't paid much attention to what OKC had going on. It's just like, they had not like entered my like field of vision. What's impressed me the most so far about Hami in his short time in Detroit is I think he's only played 3 games is, you know, like I knew he had the athleticism, right? Like obviously, you know, slam dunk champion or like in the slam dunk contest, like 40 inch vert, you know, all that stuff off the top of your head, right? What's really impressed me is the patience he's shown. He's got this, he's got like this looping, like left to right crossover. But he sets you up with it by, you know, he's playing at multiple speeds, right? But his top gear is so much faster than anybody else's top gear than when he hits it, like he's at the rim, right? And so having a guy who can do that consistently is just like an element we haven't had all that often in Detroit. But it's an element that Troy Weaver very clearly values. And so I'll be curious to see what kind of deal they signed Hami to in the offseason. I know that was part of the reason why he was available from the Thunder. Thunder, obviously, like you got Lou Dort in there and you got to pay Shea soon. And I don't, I don't know if you want to do that and pay Hami, but yeah, Hami was brought in to be a part of this team long term. And so far that's looking like another Troy Weaver steal.
Yeah. I mean, you put him with Jeremy Grant, you go get eventually, obviously you're gonna upgrade at the five, but that's, you know, those two together guarding the perimeter is tough. And then obviously whoever you get in the draft, it's just a lot of nice pieces. So were you one of the guys when free agency started that was like, what the hell? And since then, are you like, okay, I see you, Troy Weaver. I get it. Let's just keep doing what we're doing.
So it's funny. I went to bed early on the first of free agency. And so like half of the stuff I missed, right? Like when I went to bed, they had just signed Jahlil Okafor for like, for a minimum. I was like, okay.
About that.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, okay, I haven't seen, you know, I missed the DeLon Wright trade. I missed, what else happened? I missed they'd already gotten rid of like Tony Snell and Luke Kennard and Bruce Brown by then. And so it's just once I like sat, basically because I wasn't reacting in real time to everything, I could like sit down and like look at the roster and things started to fall into place. Like the thing that always like was readily apparent to me after what Troy Weaver like, you know, detonated and reconstructed the roster was that it was built for life after Blake Griffin. It didn't make, like nothing made a lot of sense with Blake Griffin in place, right? Like Jeremy Grant's just starting small forward when we all know he's a four. There's like a lot of pseudo, like not a lot of shot creation. You're going to be asking Blake to do a lot. But like, it was very clear that like Blake wasn't going to be on this team forever. And that like when he wasn't, like that would open up a lot of minutes for Josh Jackson and Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart, right? And so like I always kind of was willing to give Troy Weaver the benefit of the doubt. And I think that has served me better than just like assuming that just because you sign and trade for five centers in the first like 5 minutes of free agency, you don't know what you're doing.
It was even more exacerbated by the fact that at least for people within that follow the NBA closely, Troy Weaver has been trying to be a GM for so long and been passed over for so long. Then he gets this job and signs four centers on the first day of free agency. And everyone's like, right. Oh my God.
Well, so that's interesting, right? Because it's interesting because when Stan got fired, right. Mm-hmm. The Pistons didn't hire a GM immediately. Ed Stefanski stepped up to lead the GM search and then kind of eventually just took the president of basketball senior advisor role and was, you know, running the team day to day. And it turns out the Pistons wanted to interview Troy Weaver at that time and weren't permitted to by the Thunder, or at least that's like, you know, scuttlebutt. Mm-hmm. Right. And so now, you know, 2 years later, they've traded Andre Drummond for a sack of Skittles and some cap space. They've set themselves up to move on. They've set themselves up for life without Blake Griffin. Like once Blake gone, the cap is pretty clean. And now that makes themselves like a more appealing destination for Troy. And the Thunder are also like, you know, in a much different place than they were 2 years ago, right? Like they are also rebuilding. And so he's allowed to have the opportunity to interview with the team is selected. And now we just see the diverging ways these two teams are now being run, despite the fact that they used to be connected by this one guy. Like, I don't know if you noticed, the Thunder are not prioritizing like a bunch of high motor athletes who can't shoot as much as they used to be.
Yeah, no, I know.
The Thunder, there's no way Troy Weaver drafts Pokuševski, right? Like that's not his type of guy.
Yeah. And I, to be honest with you, I look at the Thunder and I'm like, I just hate, I don't like their, I know people are different than me around the league, people that follow the league and cover the league. I'm just not, I mean, I love Shea, but I just don't love what they've done with their roster, and they're overachieving way too much for what is currently on their roster. They are going to play themselves out of anything potentially draft wise. Like, and their other two first round picks this year, the protections are such that they might get screwed out of all their picks this year. So I'm not sure what that's another team that's like, they should be tanking, but they are struggling to figure out how to tank the right way.
Well, their war chest is so big, right? That the next James Harden situation, and you probably won't get a player like James Harden in the next James Harden situation, but the next disgruntled superstar that wants out, the Thunder are in prime position to acquire that guy because they have like 30 odd draft picks over the next 7 years, right? Like their haul beats anybody else's haul.
Yeah, that's true. But I think
that's their play, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally, but I guess my thing is Sam Presti has not proven that he has been able to make those moves and then build a winning team around those guys to keep them there, because he's made those moves before. I mean, and everyone just sort of seems to leave. I don't know. I guess I'm not as high on Sam Presti.
I mean, like in Sam Presti's defense is Oklahoma City. Like,
right. No, I get it. I totally get it. But that's why I like loading up the war chest with picks to go get guys that ultimately are not necessarily going to sign. I would rather have a guy who it seems like Troy Weaver actually is, that can evaluate talent. And if you're going to get all these picks, like try to hit on some of these picks, which honestly he's done okay with his drafting, but you know, 10 years ago, he obviously drafted three Hall of Famers, but I don't love a lot of their roster. I know we get a lot of times we get like caught up with good players on bad teams. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people watch OKC and they like think this guy, that Pokuševski, is going to be like the next star. He's good. He's a good player. But they need so much. That team needs so, so much. And maybe they'll get it with a trade with these picks. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
37 picks in the next seven drafts or whatever it is just doesn't seem, I don't know. I just doesn't seem like the way to me.
It's a philosophical thing, right?
Yeah.
Like Troy Weaver specifically, he knows which darts he's throwing. He's aiming very precisely with the darts that he's given, right? Sam Presti just has a shotgun blast full of darts.
Yes.
And it's like, it's a philosophical question of like, which one of those is going to turn out to be more, productive. And it's like, I don't know. We'll see. And ask me in 5 years.
Yeah. I think the dart has a better chance to succeed quicker, but I don't know. It's weird to me. I think you guys have a chance. It assume like in the, when you draft in the, if you draft in the top three and get your guy with the pieces that are being put around that team to succeed a little bit quicker. Although I get it, the Thunder do have an all-star level player, but I just think they have so many other guys that probably wouldn't play for any other team in the league. So it's just weird. It is true. It's different philosophies. But as far as you guys go, actually, here's something I've been wondering. What happened to my guy, Seiko Demboya?
Oh, man.
What's going on there?
So the last couple of games, at least, it's been migraines, which is a concern because he was concussed earlier this year when – who was it? I think it was Kyle Lowry kicked him in the back of the head.
Ugh.
Yeah, exactly. And he had a concussion last year, which I was reminded of after the second concussion by somebody else. And so like now we've got the migraines. And so like now I'm like officially pretty cautious about like his long-term situation. Obviously he's a very young kid. That's not something you want to, like, brain injuries are nothing to mess with, right? And so that's obviously just like take as much time as he needs to get right and then go from there. But even prior to that, though, he had been just like you talk about how there's guys on OKC who couldn't play for any other NBA team. He did not look like he belonged on an NBA floor. He wasn't very good. And like I understand that he's 20 and I understand he turned 20 like in December. I understand he's like still, I believe he's still one of the 20 youngest players in the league. But you can't, Dwayne Casey has said, and I believe when he says this, that like the way that he wants to operate the development of these guys is to like reward good play. Like you play well, you get minutes. Like we do positive reinforcement. You don't play well, right? Like we're still training you in practice and everything. They were really big in the G League, last year. Didn't send a G team to the Gubble this year. That probably was a mistake, but that's, I got to ask Tom Gores' pocketbook about that one. Seiko hasn't played well enough to earn the minutes that everybody else has pretty much been given. Like Tyler Cook played 23 minutes tonight, right? And Tyler Cook's on his second 10-day with the team, and he's been like fine, nothing amazing. He can jump real quick, he can jump real high, like that's cool. But like, is he like in an ideal world, like he's not part of this long-term core, and Seiko is. But it's hard for me to say with a straight face that Seiko's been better than Tyler Cook, right? Like the season just in general. And so it makes sense that he's just not going to see the floor under those circumstances. It's been a big source of frustration for a lot of fans, right? Because, you've won 14 games. Why not play this kid you drafted at 15 last year, who, showed out in the G League and showed a lot of promise in his first couple of NBA starts? And then you look and he's just like, he doesn't belong on an NBA court right now. Like, that's kind of why.
Damn. It's unfortunate because obviously, you know, last year I saw a couple games. He looked good. He won me some money in FanDuel last year. Honestly, that's where I like. That's
oh,
why
yeah.
I
during
like,
the streak. Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
That's why I like him so much, honestly, because, but no, I thought coming into the year, and that was another thing where when I saw all these guys that were getting signed before the season, I'm like, what about Sekou? Like, what's happening here? What's going to happen to him? That sucks. I didn't know about the concussion thing. That is nothing to mess with. So yeah, hopefully that, you know, he gets back from that. Cause that's rough. He is young. So we'll see what happens there. All right. Last thing. So we got about, I don't know, what's the so Detroit is how many games you guys have left? So it's
25.
You've played 48, so 24.
20, yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah.
Have you started looking at prospects? Like, do you have a guy that you're into, or do you have a couple guys that you're like, oh, if we get any of these guys, I'll be happy.
I mean, I was doing that after like game 30, right? Like,
okay.
Like when you're what, like when you're like 8-24 or whatever they were, it's fair. Like, yeah, I think it's time to start looking at the college guys. And so obviously, you know, this draft has been pitched as like, there's five guys. All these guys are good. There's levels within those five guys. But like, if you get one of these five guys, you're good. And, you know, I did my own evaluation, but like I kind of came to the same consensus that everybody else has. There's other guys I like outside of the top five, which is like not what Pistons fans want to hear, obviously. But like with the new lottery rules, like it is kind of a requirement that you have to think outside of the top five. I bring this up every time I talk about the lottery. The Ja Morant year, the Zion Ja Morant year, Memphis and New Orleans both won, I think, 33 and 34 games that season. And so, like, as such, like, they weren't the worst teams in the league, but they still picked 1 and 2. If I remember correctly, Phoenix won 19 games in an 82-game season and picked 6th, right? Like, that is impossibly rough, but it also means that, like, you have to factor in, you know, six, seven, eight guys in your draft evaluations when, even if you're, you know, a bottom three team, because the possibility remains, it's out there. And so obviously, you know, I like Cade. Everybody likes Cade. Cade would fit seamlessly on this Pistons team that only has like two or three guys who can create their own shot. And only like one guy in Plumlee, who was like a plus-plus passer for his position. I like Mobley a lot. Mobley would fit in really nicely with the displayed ability of this team to defend, right? You imagine a lineup where it's like, you know, Killian, Diallo, Sadiq, Jeremy Grant, Evan Mobley, right? Like, that lineup is going to be able to get after it defensively and like make enough things happen on offense to where you feel like comfortable with the spacing. I like Jonathan Kuminga out of the G League.
Yeah, he's one who I haven't seen. I mean, I haven't watched a ton of college basketball this year, but he's one that I haven't really watched. Like, I haven't seen any of them.
Yeah, the Ignite guys were in a weird situation, right? They, you know, they're playing a admittedly higher level of competition than most of the NCAA guys, but they're also playing like more games in a shorter setting than they've ever played in their life, right? Like, the G League has like back-to-backs. So like, you get to see like these 18-year-old kids playing back-to-backs for the first time in their lives against like other like 25-year-olds. And, you know, colleges obviously don't have back-to-back games. And Kuminga really struggled, right? Like, he started off really hot. And then, you know, as the team lost, I think like Dante Hall got signed to Toronto, I believe. And so he was out. They lost like a couple other big guys to injury. And so all of a sudden, like, this guy who was their starting small forward was now like playing center minutes for them. And so his role changed a bunch. And he was just like not as effective an offensive player, which like is something to hold against him for sure. But you also remember he was what, he was 18 and he was being consistently relied on to generate his own offense, right? Like his entire shot diet was like catch and shoot threes, post-ups and ISOs. Like that's a hard way to make a living for an 18 year old. And they were letting him do it just to see if he could, I guess. So
yeah,
it's like, yeah, that's Brian Shaw for you. Right.
Yeah.
And then the one guy who I haven't seen a lot of actually, which is weird, is Jalen Suggs. And I know Gonzaga is really good. I know they're undefeated. Mm. I know he's played a big role for them, but I haven't seen a bunch of him so far this year. And so I'm curious to see what he's got on tape. I will say the thing that kind of worries me about Suggs is that he's billed as a guy who can shoot, but he's not really a shooter. You take out that you take out that game against Iowa where he made 7 threes. I was looking at this the other day, and after that game, including the NCAA games, the tournament games, he's shot 28% from three on the year, on pretty low volume, only like 3 attempts a game.
That's worrisome.
Like, yeah, it's not. What's worrisome for me is not only that he's shooting 28%, it's that he's not taking more threes. Like, you're a lead ball handler for a college team with a great offense. Like, you should be shooting a lot of threes, mm-hmm. but he's apparently he's just not confident enough in them. And you know, they're finding success without him doing that. But like in the NBA, if you're going to make money, if you're going to make this team better, like that's, you're going to have to shoot like pull up threes. Like that's what guards have to do in today's league. And so like not being as willing to do that as I would like is worrying.
Yeah, dude, I can't wait for the draft. You got me pumped. Like you're coming on. You're coming back on. You're going to be like one of our draft analysts. Like, dude, you're all over it, man.
I'm a draft guy purely by circumstance, right? Like
you got to do what you got to do, man. What do you think about my guy, Scotty Barnes?
I like Scotty. I don't think he's not what Detroit needs,
sure.
But you know, Detroit needs somebody like who can score and be a lead ball handler. And Scotty is definitely just like a glue guy. But Scotty's classically like the type of dude that gets drafted and everybody's like, oh, like, How did Scotty Barnes fall to 12? He's just making everybody so much better around him, and you know, has a 12-year career that's insanely productive. Yeah. But I like Scotty a lot.
He's such like, a typical not in Detroit. Such a typical. I went to Florida. I worked for Coach Hamilton when I was in college. He's such a typical.
Oh, really?
Leonard Hamilton guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like it's Patrick Williams, Jonathan Isaac. It's just the same. It's that mold. Chris Singleton. Like they're like all. Very similar players.
I appreciate the stylings of Hamilton, right? Like he is recruiting a college team the way I would if I was trying to prepare like all my guys to play in the NBA, right? Like if I was building an NBA team in college, I would recruit a hell of a lot like he does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the one thing I'll say for him, as opposed to a lot of other coaches, is you know, he does get knocked for coaching, and I understand because offensively their teams, it's just hard to watch, but there's going to be very few players in any draft that are more prepared defensively to come into the NBA, which is the hardest thing to learn as a young player coming into the NBA. So, you know, all these guys are ready.
Yeah. And that's the thing that will quickly endear you as a rookie to NBA coaches. Is like that's how you get playing time in the NBA. It's like the coach understands that he can put you on the floor and not get murdered defensively. Like that's a ticket to more playing time.
Yep. Yep. And I think it'll help him that these last couple guys that have gone high, Jonathan Isaac before the injury, and now Patrick Williams is playing great this year. That always helps to see the guys before him do it, even though Scotty's probably the best recruit they've had, maybe ever. Yeah, I don't know. Jonathan Isaac was pretty good, but Scotty Barnes was pretty highly ranked coming out of high school. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But, yeah, you're definitely – dude. I mean, you're going to come back before the draft, but we're definitely going to have you on for the draft, even if it's just out of circumstance. This year has been the least college basketball I've ever watched because I'm just not employed at a job that's requiring me to do it anymore. So, and I honestly just, college basketball is rough. So
college, I went to Michigan State. Mm-hmm. I watch a lot of Michigan State. College basketball is exceedingly rough to watch.
Yeah. I mean, like yesterday, it's just like, I there was the one night, I think it was the night of the play-in games where, you know, everyone's freaking out about two random mid majors that have, that no one's ever watched before, finishing like with a final score of like 53 to 54. Meanwhile, it's the same night that Anthony Edwards becomes the third fastest player to ever score 40 points. And Brad Beal and Donovan Mitchell go out for 40 against each other. And there's seven other guys in the NBA that score 35 in a night. And I'm like, guys, there's good basketball happening tonight. It's not these two mid majors that can't score. Like there is good basketball happening. It's not that. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But you know what? We got to watch it because we got to be prepared for the draft. So we will have you back. Laz, this was awesome. I'm happy to hear, like, I'm happy to hear the mindset of a Pistons fan right now, because I know it's like weird, like being in that weird rebuilding phase. It's interesting to know where the fan base is at, but it seems like that you at least feel like things are slowly headed in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to thank you for having me on, Joey. When you told me that you were going to start recording, you know, after halftime of the late games, I was like, oh man, like he's bunching up real close against my bedtime. But I'm glad I made the time to do this, though. This was a lot of fun.
Hey, it's been one of the tougher things about getting people to come on this podcast. We do record pretty late. But no, it ends up being fun. And this was a great episode. Everybody, listen to Pistons versus Everybody. Great podcast. Get everything you need from about the Pistons from Laz. He's your guy. At Laz, L-A-Z, Chance, the word Chance on Twitter. Go follow him. Great follow. And I'm sure we will have you back on very soon. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me, Joey.
And we'll see everybody on Monday. Alex will be back Sunday night, and we'll do it all over again next week. Later.